Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. And as always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've used for to great effect for pretty soon it'll be 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. So you can read about it in that chapter of his book, but you can also just click a link and download the PDF file of that actual worksheet process. It's a simple click and download, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You don't even need to get put on a mailing list to get access to that powerful tool. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, among some other tools that are being added practically every time the app gets updated. And the Dragon Klingon game is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. So we hope people do that soon and often. Go to that website, download Dr. Michael Rice's Chapter 24 of his book, read about this tool, download the tool itself, get some hands-on experience applying the tool anytime there's a negative emotion in your life or an upset of any kind. And we hope people do that because it's been our experience that that has been life-changing for the better, that we, those of us who use these tools, find it tremendously beneficial. We also hope people do that because it frequently leads to comments or questions or testimonials or answers, and then they can call us here on the internet show and assist us in living into our intention with this work, which is to be of service. If you have any questions, comments, answers, testimonials, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. and press the number one on your phone when you call in, and that will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I'll turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can give us a call. I meant to say you can shoot us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeanie@yagain.org. And when we receive those emails, we address them the next appropriate time on the internet show, and if we have time, we'll send you an email back and say, on such and such a day, we addressed your comment or your question and or your testimonial, and you can listen to it in the archives. The archives of this show are available through whyagain.org, whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the picture of the microphone, you can get access to the last 11-plus years of archives of these shows. You can also go to mindshiftersacademy.org website, and there are several different ways you can get specialty highlight shows from this year, from past years when people have called in and done worksheets or given testimonials. And that website was created about a little over 3 years ago to try and increase exposure to this work that Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice have created and are working so diligently to make available to people. And of course, this year we are working our way through the Way of Mastery. And the Way of Mastery, the first book in Way of Mastery is 12 Lessons. And as a book, it's titled The Way of the Heart. And on Monday of this week, I finished reading Lesson 6 for the first time all the way through. And what we've done up until now is read each of the lessons at least twice, if not more. And at this point, I'm called to move on into Lesson 7 rather than reread Lesson 6 right now. If you're interested in a review, you can go to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website, and there is a page for Way of Mastery readings with commentary. And now there's also a page for the highlights of the Way of Mastery readings with commentary. And there are only 3 files on that page right now. They are February 4th, that was the trigger for me to set up that page, and then last Friday the 25th and Friday the 28th. For whatever reason, I got some comments that those 3 shows were good to listen to multiple times. So now those are on a separate page titled Highlights of the Way of Mastery with Commentary. Lesson 7 in the Way of Mastery is titled Birthing the Mind of Christ. And as we've talked about throughout this work, this is one way to look at this, at least this first book, The Way of the Heart, is that it is a set of tools, a way of thinking about approaching your life experience, and a set of tools for developing senses, sensitivity, awareness, questioning, what I've come to call a targeted mindfulness practice that you can develop, the goal of which is to help more and more people wake up to the fact that they have access to a higher level of knowing, of intuiting, of experiencing than their conscious logical mind, than their ego, than their 9-bit mind that Michael Rice calls the carbon-based memory, just the brain in your head. So the entire point of the Way of Mastery is to help people bring conscious awareness to their connection to the one mind, the Christ mind. And lesson 7 is titled Birthing the Mind of Christ. So specifically, one of the things that's going to be talked about in this next lesson is the specifics about what we have to do, what we need to remove from our thought structure and traumatic energy storages and belief systems in order to allow an increased conscious awareness of our true nature as the extension of love and form, as a part of the one mind, as having access to wisdom and insight and creativity that goes way beyond what our intellectual mind can provide us. So the text of this lesson reads, "Forever I am with you." And just like the last lesson, then in italics, it repeats the very same words. Forever I am with you. For long before the stars were birthed, long before the planets arose, long before even a thought of physicality had emerged within the divine mind of the Son of Creation, we were already created together and equally. Yet that creation of what alone is real knows no point of birth. So this is just some words pointing back to what was happening in Lesson 4, where they said, listen, don't hold an identity of yourself as being a certain age or a certain gender or a certain profession. When people ask you who you are, tell them the truth. Tell them, I am the extension of the creative energy in form. I'm infinite and eternal. I've never been born, and I will never taste death. That's what they're driving at right here. Your essence, your consciousness, wasn't born when your physical body born. It wasn't created when your physical body emerged from your mother's womb. Your essence, your consciousness, is a part of the one mind, and it did not have a point of creation and birth. So they recommend, instead of saying, you know, I'm a psychologist and I live in Illinois and I'm certain height and certain weight and I still don't have any money to retire and I drive this kind of car, instead of all of that stuff, I vote Democratic or whatever, instead of any of that, tell them the truth. Who am I? I am the extension of love in form. I have never been born, and I will never taste death. I am infinite and eternal. I shine forth as a sunbeam to the sun. I'm an extension of that creative energy manifesting in form, and I am the effect of the Creator's love, and I stand before you to love you. That same knowledge is getting referenced here in the very first paragraph of Lesson 7. Yet the creation of that alone which is real doesn't know any point of birth. Your essence, which was created in the same moment as every other consciousness, as Yeshua, as every other saint, as every other Buddha that you know, you were created in that same event. There aren't any words for this because it's saying there was no point of birth. It was at a time beyond time. And so the text goes on and says, therefore, because the Father is forever, so too have we abided together and been sustained together in this energy of creation that some call love. Throughout all time and even unto eternity do we abide together in the capital R reality of who we are, in the actuality of our consciousness. Therefore, think it not extraordinary when I say unto you, quote, I am with you always, even unto the end of this age. What journey have you ever taken that is not familiar to me? What journey have I ever taken that is in truth not familiar to you? For when you look upon me from some deep place of knowingness within, though the words may be different, you say within yourself, behold, Christ appears before me. When you hold a thought of me in the mind, and the body is flooded with emotion, soft and gentle and light, and you recognize that the Holy Son of God was birthed and perfected in your friend, Yeshua ben Joseph, what is it within you that knows that this is the truth? What part of your mind, what capacity within your heart can look upon me and recognize the truth, capital T truth, within me, so that you have love for me? For I say unto you, it is the same as that part of my mind, that part of my heart, that looks upon you and says, behold, the Holy Child of creation is before me, and I have great love for this one. That which knows, that which comprehends immediately, that is the mind of Christ. It recognizes itself in each and every person. That mind of Christ dwells within you in its fullness now. Therefore, as I have said unto you many times, never fail to remember that it takes one to know one. If you would look upon me and say, beloved friend, thank you, then look well upon yourself and say, beloved friend, thank you, and allow your breath to flow. How many journeys have there been? How many moments of experience passed under the bridge of your beingness before you began to reawaken to the truth that is true always? Again, the truth that is true always is you cannot be separated from your Creator. You remain as your Creator created you to be. You and your Creator are one. You are one with all of creation. That's what they're referring to every time they say the truth that is true always. How many moments of experience passed under the bridge of your beingness before you first began to reawaken to the truth that is true always? How many lifetimes, how many worlds, before a light began to dawn, imperceptibly at first, so that it was not even recognized, and a tiny voice whispered from a place that seemed so far removed from where you dwelt? And that voice said, beloved son, you are with me now. Beloved offspring, beloved of the creation, remain as I have created you to be. You remain as I have created you to be. Therefore, be at peace. You are made of this stuff we call love. We cherish you. Yet that voice seems so far away, so faint, that surely it could not be your own. Surely it was just a moment's fantasy. in the midst of some journey, you paused. And as a raindrop fell upon a leaf, and your eyes looked upon that experience, you felt and you knew that you were one with the leaf and the raindrop, and that indeed you were those things. How many moments of experience passed before these kinds of qualities began to emerge in your consciousness as what seemed to be at first this tiny mad idea? Thoughts such as, oh my God, I just felt myself to be one with all of creation. Well, I better not tell anybody about that. And then off you went. But the moments began to come more often, still perhaps fleetingly, and yet now more familiar. There's a sense underneath all of the drama, all of the crying, all of the lamenting, all of the resenting, all of the fearing, all of the striving, and all of the seeking, the still tiny voice would come to you and say, quote, beloved offspring, you remain as I have created you to be. You are love, loving and lovable forever. You are wholly loving and lovable forever. The tiny voice would still steal through the roar and the din that had seemed to make a home within your mind. Rest assured, you would not be where you appear to be in this moment if you had not already begun to experience many moments that expressed the quality I have just described to you, that quality of truly hearing the still small voice of the Comforter within. What this is saying is you would not even be listening to this reading of this book. You would not even be open to hearing about a book like this unless in the depth of your consciousness you have had experiences like that. And that your conscious logical mind, it might be saying, well, I've never had that. I just keep hearing people talk about it, and I wish I had moments like that, but I've never had any of those. This book is saying, in essence, the truth is you have had those moments. And perhaps they were so long ago, so many lifetimes ago, so early in this lifetime, that you don't have conscious awareness of it as a memory, and yet you would not be drawn to these kinds of teachings unless in your depth this had begun to awaken within you, that these experiences had begun to accumulate and attune you to that still small voice. What they're calling here, that still small voice of the Comforter within you, the great Comforter, the Holy Spirit, the Christ mind, the mind of the Creator, the impersonal life and mind from Joseph S. Benner, all of that's referring to this instant, constant connection that each and every one of us has to the forces, to the awareness, to the intelligences that can teach us if we just ask to be taught. The text goes on to say, therefore, indeed, each one of you knows that there is a longing within you that cannot and will not any longer be denied. You know from the Christ within you that Christ has stirred within you. And Christ, the Christ mind, is rising up to take its rightful place as the master of your mind and your heart and your body and your breath and your dreams and your passions. Each of you knows that this is absolutely futile to attempt to settle for anything less. It does not come because of anything I have ever done for you. It comes because it must come. It must arise within each created mind, regardless of its journeys, regardless of its attempts to deny what is eternally true. That is called the illusion of the dream of separation. It must come, and it is inevitable, because the Christ mind will not be denied. Christ cannot be denied, only because only Christ can express what is absolutely true. Only the one mind, only the awakened awareness of connection to all of creation, can express what is fully true. So, you know, we create all kinds of mental gymnastics around punishment and the need to be punished with this religion and that religion, and we get downloads from our parents that we're so unlovable and we're so nasty, and that's why we have to be yelled at and spanked and locked in our rooms and all of these other unpleasant things that happen to us as children. And then we download the belief that we are not brilliant, we are not holy, we are not special, we are not loved, loving, and lovable forever, that the saints are at a very different level, that Yeshua is a different level, Jesus is at a different level, God is at a different level, and we're separated from all of that. And this work, this last paragraph said, this awakening to the Christ mind within you is coming not because Jesus did something for you, not because you've been blessed by some saint, not because somebody died on a cross for you. It's coming, and you're awakening to it because it must come, because it's your nature. And you can shove a lot of trivialities in your intellect and negativities and false beliefs and traumatic energies into your experience of life. And you can hide this from yourself for a period of time, but it will not be denied. Everyone will awaken at some point in time and recognize their connection to the divine mind. And this last paragraph says it very clearly. This doesn't come because of anything Jesus or Yeshua has done for you. It comes because it must come, because it must arise within each created mind, because that's the nature of its creation, to be a part of the one mind, to have the Christ mind as its foundation. And this is going to happen regardless of all the journeys you've taken in your mind and the life experiences and the sufferings and the beliefs, regardless of your mind's attempts to deny what is eternally true, the Christ mind will arise within you, will awaken, will come to fruition, will become your conscious awareness. Because everything you've shoved into your mind, all the trivialities in the intellect, is called the illusion of the dream of separation. And the illusion must give way to the actuality. The Christ mind awakening must come, and it is inevitable, because that Christ mind is your true nature and will not be denied. The text goes on to say, only Christ, the Christ mind energy, can so inform the cellular structure of the body that even the simplest of gestures extends love unto another who beholds it. Only Christ knows how to breathe the breath that releases all trauma and all hurt. Only the Christ mind understands the power of true forgiveness, which is always, by the way, forgiveness of oneself, since no one has wronged you at any time. And as we learned in Lesson 3, It's not pardoning myself. It's going into my false perceptions, seeing them as false, and dismantling them. The word forgiveness here means to dismantle my false perceptions. And just verbatim from lesson three, to forgive means to choose to release another from the false perceptions you have been projecting upon them. It is, therefore, an act of forgiving or dismantling one's self of one's false projections. And as you do that, as you remove the false perceptions in your mind, you project less and less onto your images of others, and you begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships with everybody around you through the simple act of not being aware of what happens, this process of projection that happens in the instant you forget that you're the one creating your experience of life, that you're the one creating all of the images that show up in your mind, that your intellect then tries to convince you is an accurate representation of the world around you. So that paragraph says, listen, the Christ consciousness will awaken in you eventually. It must. Because only that Christ consciousness can so inform the cellular structure of your body that even the simplest of gestures will extend the energy of creation that some call love to everyone around you every time you make the gesture. Only the Christ mind knows how to breathe the breath that releases all trauma and all hurt. Only the Christ mind understands the power of true forgiveness, which is the power to dismantle every false perception, every perception you create which hides from you the shimmering radiance of the creative energy expressing in form, which is your true nature and the true nature of everyone and everything you look at. Only Christ can bring a smile to the lips of a body such that when another looks upon you and sees that smile, their heart is filled. Only the Christ mind can walk this earth and yet not be of the world. Only the Christ mind can transcend every limited and fearful creation, transforming them into the beautiful flower that blossoms and gives its sweet fragrance to all of creation. Isn't it that you long to feel moving through your being? Isn't that call to awaken alive within you now? Beloved friends, you know that it is. Love you, therefore, one another. And love you, therefore, the capital S self, your true self, that has been given unto you of the Creator. Learn to hear only that voice. Learn to desire only that voice. Learn to follow only that voice that knows the truth is true always. Capital T, truth is true always. Here's another way to say that truth, which is true always. Quote, I and my heavenly Father are one. This world is but a passing shimmer and a dream. This world holds no value save that which Christ can bring to it. Only love is real. Anything else is the choice to momentarily believe in illusion. Rest assured, any illusion within an illusory world can seem to hold great power. And yet all power has been given unto you. All power under heaven and earth is given unto the holy, holy child of God of all creation. And that power dwells within you as the life of your life, the breath of your breath, the truth of your truth, the being of your being, and the joy of your joy. There has never been an illusory creation that has ever in truth threatened it. Nor can any illusion take this reality from you. The only thing that can occur is that you use the power to believe in loss. All forms of loss that you perceive through the physical eyes or through the worldly mind are nothing more than passing shades of your insistence on believing that loss is possible. All forms of the contraction known as fear are nothing more than temporary modifications of the very power given unto you, a power that you have sought to use to see if it were possible to convince yourself that something besides love is real. Think about that. You have been given the power. This is right back to the first two lessons. This is just talking about it a slightly different way. You're the one who's creating your experience of life. You can create the experience of being separated from your creator. It's a dream. It's an illusion. It's never happened, but you can feel that as though it's true. You can have sights and sounds, physical sensations, emotions, disruptions in your body's energy system, and you can create the delusion, the thought process that says, yes, I'm clearly separate from the lamp on the table over there and the tree outside the window, and how much more so must I be separate from God? And I can create the sadness and the fear and the loneliness within me as though it were possible for me to be separated from the source of my creation and the life energy that gives rise to my heart beating, my food digesting, my breath moving in each new present moment. And yet, it's only me using the power of creative thought, the power of the focus of my conscious awareness, which has been given equally to every one of us, to create an experience of life. So that paragraph again reads, the only thing that can occur is that you use the power of the choice of where you focus your conscious awareness to believe in loss. The previous paragraph said that nothing within an illusory world can harm you at all. All power under heaven and earth has been given unto you as a child of creation. That power dwells within you as the life of your life, the breath of your breath, the truth of your truth, the being of your being, and the joy of your joy. And there's never been an illusion that could in truth hurt you at all or threaten you in any way. And at the same time that's true, you can use that power that you've been given to create the dream of separation, the fear of loss, the experience of loss. And this book wants us to wake up and understand that all forms of loss that we perceive through the physical eyes or through the worldly mind, these are just the natural consequence of the belief in separation. They're nothing more than the passing shades of an insistence on believing that loss is possible. All forms of the contraction known as fear are nothing more than temporary modifications of the very power that's been given to you, the power to focus, choose the focus of your conscious awareness. This is a power that you have sought to use to see if it were possible to convince yourself that something besides the truth of creation, the truth of love, is real. The text goes on to say, but the story is over. The dream of separation is ending. the whole of creation is now experiencing a growing power, a movement, a momentum that must carry the mind from which creation springs to a new level. It is not so much an evolutionary level as a level of recognition. A level of remembrance. A level of returning. That wave of momentum is alive and has already arisen within your heart and mind. You know it. Please stop denying it. Stop questioning it. Stop looking for signs from the world around you that it's all right to feel it. Accept it as a divine gift from your Creator. For the call has gone out. Though many listen, few hear, and fewer still become completely devoted to responding. Therefore, let your prayer always be this, quote, may Christ alone dwell within and as this creation that I once thought was myself. May Christ alone inform each thought and each breath and each choice. May love direct each step. May love transform this journey through time, that in time I might truly know the reality of eternity, the sanctity of peace, the holiness of intimacy, and the joy of the Creator's love prior to every breath, and indeed prior to every thought that arises within the mind. Close quotes. Now, for my money, that's worth reading again. Here's the quote. Therefore, let your prayer always be this, quote, may Christ alone dwell within and as this creation that I once thought was myself. May Christ alone inform each thought and each breath and each choice. May love direct each step. May love transform this journey through time, that in time I might truly know the reality of eternity, the sanctity of peace, the holiness, yes, the holiness of intimacy, and the joy of the Creator's love, and I might know that prior to every breath, and indeed even prior to every thought that arises within the mind. Close quotes. The text goes on to say, for when you know, when you feel the essence that you are holiness itself, when you get what they were calling us to tap into in lesson 4, I am the extension of love in form. I am the effect of the Creator's love, and I stand before you to love you. When you get that, how could you ever look upon your brother or sister and believe that they have wronged you? How could you ever want to do anything but extend the love that you are to them? That is to let the love of the Christ mind flow through you so deeply and so profoundly that they get that you do not believe their illusion. You've awakened from your own dream, and you're not going to buy into theirs. When you give unto another that which alone is true, the truth, the awareness, the conscious, awake awareness of their true nature and your true nature, and you give that to them, because all minds are joined, you have offered unto them the only gift that holds any value. When you give another the truth, perhaps even without saying a word, again, because all minds are joined, they recognize what has been offered and say unto themselves, quote, "The one before me knows the truth of me and is looking right through every one of my attempts to be less than who I am. Therefore, I see that it is safe to choose again," close quote. That is when miracles occur. The text goes on. "Do not strive to heal this world. Do not do anything to make a show of how much you love another. Give up the concept of being a busy bee. Simply be the presence of love. Because you know that there's absolutely no value in being anything else. And that, in truth, the truth of this is you have never succeeded at being anything but the presence of love. Each sane moment that you have experienced, each moment of unlimitedness, each moment of genuine intimacy, each moment of grace-filled joy that you have ever known, in whatever form it seems to appear, has come to you because you have allowed your mind to slip into the sea of peace. And there you have merely abided, empty, wanting nothing, seeking nothing, being merely the presence of what you are. When that quality becomes cultivated, there's that word again, when that quality becomes cultivated so that it permeates your consciousness with each breath and with each moment, then you will know that Christ has indeed arisen this day, and you will celebrate Easter with each breath. I have, looking at the time, and we're coming up on one of my favorite little stories in this work. And I'm wondering if we have enough time to read that little story. So I'm gonna give it an attempt, although I do have to end right away when Jeannie comes on. But the text goes on. The next section is titled "The Shadow of Fear." The question arises, if all of this stuff we just read is true, if the Christ mind is awakening within you, if your true nature is love, if your awakening as the Christ mind is inevitable, the next question is, what then could ever possibly arise to obstruct the truth, capital T truth, that is true always? Well, here's a story. There is an ancient forest on your planet, a forest so high in a rugged mountain valley and so rugged that no one has ever been there. This forest is unknown to the minds of humanity, and life goes on in the forest. Deep within the heart of this forest, this morning, a little tiny blade of grass seemed to be tossed by an unseen wind. And as it tossed for just a fragment of a moment, so subtle and so soft was this wind, that as the sunlight played against this blade of grass, it cast the smallest of conceivable shadows on a stone that was just a little bit away from the blade of grass. Now, in truth, no one noticed this. The shadow had no effect. The rock did not even notice. No one on the planet noticed. No one in any of the heavens noticed except me. I needed something to build a story around. That tiny shadow, cast by a little blade of grass, momentarily wiggling in a wind in some remote forest high in the mountains, that shadow has virtually no effect on the turning of the planets, the creation of new suns, and certainly not one trace of an effect on how deeply your Creator has love for you. And in truth, that little shadow is what you have given power to. I'll say that again. That little shadow is what you have given power to. And because you've given it power, it seems to be able to obstruct the truth within you from being lived. For the moment that you give that tiny little shadow power, and in every moment that you give that shadow power, fear is born. Fear is always a contraction away from love, capital L love, from the truth of life. Fear makes you smaller than the blade of grass that momentarily seems to cast a shadow and therefore obstructs your recognition of the warmth of the sun that bathes you always. Your instant, constant, eternal connection to the forces of creation that gave rise to you and extend through you in each moment. So here's the critical thing. When you resist healing, when you struggle to learn to, quote, speak your truth, you may rest assured that something has occurred just prior to your resisting healing or speaking your truth. What is it that occurred? It is your decision to believe that that little shadow is all-powerful, and that if you heal, if you grow, if you change, if you let the Christ mind be birthed consciously within you and live in you, then that little blade of grass, that tiny little blade of grass and that tiny shadow it casts for a very temporary moment, that little shadow is going to punish you and crush you. So you better be afraid, and you better shrink away from the truth of your nature. If you can truly take this story into your being and recognize the utter laughability of such a belief, you will never fear again. You will never again allow fear to master you and direct the course of your life. Now, this is critical. It doesn't say you will never have fear again. It says when fear arises, you will see it for what it is, and you will not let it drive your behavior. You will not let it master you and run the course of your life. If you can truly take this story into your being and recognize how laughable it is, and it's just a false belief, if you can do that, when fear comes, you will recognize it as false. And you will never fear the fear again. And you will never allow fear to master you and direct the course of your life. You will learn what it means to trust what is birthed in the heart. And you will arise and you will go forth without fear, with no worry at all. You will accomplish whatever creativity wishes to express through you. And the whole while, you will know that of yourself, you do nothing. And yet the Father through you can do anything. So, the next part asks us to take a look at, what have we given the power of that fear to? What forms of that shadow of the blade of grass are you allowing to run and own and possess your soul? There are many forms of that shadow, are there not? There are peers and parents and siblings to please. There are governments to bow down to. There are mates and children that must come first. There are bills to pay. There are desires to check and keep in order. There are activities and statements and behaviors that are done by others that require, well, at least 7 or 8 hours a day for you to analyze and judge them and think, oh my God, this world is exhausting, but somebody has to do it. This lesson would call us to question every negative perception, every negative thought. Certainly everyone that leads us to generate the emotion of fear, and understand that fear is always a contraction away from the truth of life and love. And the more we can step into analyzing the truth of what we're doing with our mind energy, and every time it comes up as less than love, see it as false, and playfully, joyfully step into owning it without beating ourselves up, we take ourselves instantaneously to where we want to be. And that is the gift of recognizing the truth of fear, the gift that will come to us when we recognize that fear is false. And we cancel our need to be right, and we cancel our identification with those beliefs and that are negative. We transform our lives. So, that's where we'll end for today. Jeannie Rice is here. Hopefully she's able to step in maybe a moment earlier than normal. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Wednesday, March the 30th, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael just a minute to dial in. I'll direct you to the website, and it's whyagain.org, and click on either the bullseye or the start here in the upper left corner, and it will take you to where all of the worksheets are and kind of a guide of how to get started, where to get started if you're not familiar with the work. I will put again in the notes for today, but I want to go ahead and announce that tomorrow, Thursday, the 31st, at 3:30 Eastern Time, that's 8:30 London Time, Michael and I will be on the Why Again Book Club again. And the information for signing in, the Zoom link, and all of that is on the website. It's under events. It's also under schedule, and it's in the notes for the last couple of days. So if you get the opportunity to join us on that call, it is a global book club. There are people from every country in it, and they're right now not necessarily reading the Why Is This Happening to Me Again, because she actually made the statement that it doesn't matter if you've read the book totally yet or not, that it's about learning forgiveness. And last week we went through the worksheet that's actually in the book, which is a different version than what we use today. And she used slides to pop up each step, one step at a time, for those who maybe didn't have a book with them or didn't have the worksheet with them. And so the link to watch that, if you missed it last week, the link to watch that is on the website as well. It's under the same, under schedules or events. So you can go there and click on it and watch the video. They recorded it and see about that worksheet. I also put that under, if you go to the website and you go underneath the MP3s of special radio shows where we've walked people through doing a worksheet. I also put the link to that under those special MP3s. So you can find it in several locations on our website. If you have trouble with it, you can text me if you've got my phone number, or drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And I'll send you the direct link if you can't find it on the website. Michael is still not in, and we'll give him just another minute. We appreciate you participating with us. We appreciate your questions and your answers and your comments, because that leads us into a direction where the show really is yours. I mean, that's why we're here. We're here to support you in your process. And we were going to continue a conversation with Susan, but I did get a text from her that she would call in when she was free, but that she can't be here at the beginning. So when she can call in, we will continue our conversation from the last couple of days. She's had some fabulous questions and comments. And we would like for all of you to do that. Let us know what's on your mind. Let us know where we can help you and how we can support you. And I'm going to step in here and see if Michael is having challenges getting in. So hold just one second. All right, he needs just another minute, so I will just talk. I've asked everybody then to hold the space. A friend of mine, she actually just went through a breakup with her boyfriend, and her son, who is a teenager, I guess he's probably 15, is not handling it real well, and he doesn't want to talk to her about it. So I've offered to work with him and support him in processing what's up for him with this breakup. And to hold the space that he'll be willing to listen and reach out. And, you know, he's in pain. It doesn't, you know, a lot of times we think that these are all grown-up issues, and they're not. So hold the space for him and hope that he reaches out and lets me assist him in looking how to forget the reality that's going on in his mind right now. Because we all know that the breakup is not the cause of his pain. There's probably a loss from when his mom and dad divorced that he hasn't dealt with or settled. And so seeing another adult leave his life has triggered that. So I just hope that he allows me to help him work through that, to hold the space for that. And Michael has joined us now, so welcome, Michael. I did tell him about
the book club for
tomorrow night.
Sweet. And then we're going to continue it every second and fourth Thursday afternoon, if you're in London, England. So from here on to until further notice, I don't know how long it'll go on, what will happen with it, but we're going to rock forward with studying why is this happening to me again. And here we are with the opportunity to continue the conversation. And is Susan with us?
No, she actually just texted me and said she can't be on at the beginning, that she'll call in just as soon as she can. So she's not with us
right now. Oh, cool. Okay. Awesome. Well, yesterday we were talking about the event that happened at the Academy Awards a couple nights ago. And then what happened in 1973, the Academy Awards. Interesting, if you look that one up, where John Wayne had to be restrained by six security guards in order to keep him from beating up on a young Native American girl who had just refused the Academy Award for Marlon Brando. And I was talking to someone this morning, and they were mentioning how, you know, this is really something that we're seeing all over the world. So it's happening in Ukraine. You know, people relying on violence to try to produce the results that they want. We look at how much that's going on in the political system, how much verbal, emotional violence is happening there, and right down to the physical as well. And it's definitely time for people wake up, and instruction that we often give to children is use your words instead of your hands, your teeth, or your fists, or what have you. And yet we live in a world where it's difficult for people to restrain themselves. And if the modeling that they've got is the use of violence in order to resolve conflicts, in order to if they've observed, if they've had someone model for them using violence to get what they want, then that becomes a power person dynamic in their minds, and they will tend. I've had a couple of different people who contacted me and mentioned the power person dynamic and how clear it was for them in this event at the Oscars. So, interesting time on Earth to be looking at our issues, to be looking at the dynamic, especially of violence, and the willingness to retain a space of peace within ourselves, as opposed to allowing this violent internal dialogue, internal modeling to be aroused, and, you know, doing everything that it does to physiology, and then moving into that arena of force to try to get someone else to do what it is that we want them to do. And of course, the solution to all of that being the actual action of, or the engagement in, forgiveness as a way to weaken the energetic patterns within ourselves that reflect as violent responses. And that the forgiveness process is a way, you don't, if we listen to Yeshua, you go back 2,000 years ago, and they say to him, in effect, you know, how do you be a human being? Well, what's most important in doing this? And he speaks not about, you know, loving your neighbor, as the Greeks say, but actually in Aramaic, what he spoke about, his response there, was about how to maintain a mindset. He uses the word, not love toward neighbor, but rachma, with neighbor or creator and self. And that this state of rachma is what takes us into a space where active present love becomes the viable option, as opposed to physiologically stored memories of violence, you know, modeling where people used violence to try to get what they wanted from us or from the people around us. So it's interesting how it all ties together, and what we're here to awaken to is the truth of who we are as human beings, to return to the original nature of who we are, instead of the attempt to force. So when we think that we're bodies, we tend to function out of the body's mind. What we're looking to do is to change the mindset so we have the option to function out of the true mind of being. And of course, being, actually the fact of being, that we are conscious, active, present love, to function out of the mind of being. The ancient teachings, that was called by a word that some people interpret as religious, but it had nothing to do with religion, of working out of the mind of Christ, the mind of conscious, active, present love. And that when we do that, we get to function quite differently. If you've ever held a newborn and tapped into the essence of that newborn, you know exactly what we're talking about. That conscious, active, present love, the sweetness, the purity, the beauty. And when you tap into the essence of that newborn, you notice that the newborn, when you use the word love in relationship to newborn, you're not describing what they're doing to you. You're describing the state of being that they are. You know, we've defined life before as love flowing through a cell. And anything that takes us away, anything that restricts the flow of life through a cell, is self-destruction. On an energetic level, restricting that flow of love through our own cellular structure is the only thing that can kill us, literally. And so the key to healing both self and others is that I can maintain with practice that state of being in myself and function as love. In our culture, we've lost one of the most basic principles of creation, that is, as creators, we empower what we give our attention to. And Yeshua 2,000 years ago says, let thine eye be single, and thy body will be filled with light. You say, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, he's telling us how creation works. He says the body will be filled with light. And he's probably one of the primo scientists in all of history. And if you talk to the scientists today, they'll tell you that matter is light energy solidified. Let thine eye be single means a singular focus on one frequency, one energy, to the exclusion of all else, and it shows up in your physiology. And if we fight against something, if we hate the hater, then we just added more hate to the world. If we're violent toward the violent, then we just added more violence to the world. So by focusing on that which we want to change, we add energy to it. Whereas the focus on recognizing who we are and bringing that presence of being forward in any given situation, that's what starts to fill our structures with light. That's what brings about love in form, the movement of love through a cell. So when we focus on the insanity in the world, we become enmeshed in the same thing as the world's enmeshed in. Lost in conflict, oftentimes generational. People have no awareness of the truth of who they are. So the task, you know, when you put it back in the context of Yeshua's answer where the Greek tells us, he said, love your neighbor, not what he said. The task is not to love another. That's an impossibility. The task is to be the presence of love. There's never a command given to love one another. It was be the presence of love. It's a whole different thing. So the command was be the love that you are. So this is the real task of relationship, the real task of, you know, whether it's a relationship in a marriage, with a child, with a parent, a customer, an employee, an employer, or even a battlefield enemy. To return to the truth of who we are and function as love becomes key. When fear, hostility is active in the mind, and that's what we're focused in, we're working out of corrupt data. You know, notice that every time you've ever done something you regret, the underlying energy was some form of fear or hostility. And hostility in any of its forms is not an emotion, but it's a drug. And people use that drug for one purpose, and that is to cover pain. It's an anesthetic. And when people anesthetize themselves, they not only anesthetize and deaden the awareness of pain that they're experiencing, but they deaden the awareness of the presence of love, who they are. So anything we do to restrict the flow of love destroys life. So the offering here is that all death is self-inflicted. All death is suicide. Engaging in what it takes to enhance the flow of love through a cell is going to enhance life. And in doing that, death is literally healed. In every disease, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, relational, financial, if you restore yourself to love, you'll transmute, transform, and heal everything that's less than love in you. If you look at the great beings of history, what were they able to do? They really maintained the presence of love regardless of what was done to them. No matter what the environment of insanity demanded of them, they maintained that connectedness to love. So when I do that as love, I'm not loving you, I'm functioning as love. And when that happens, we're both touched and healed by the purity of that active presence of love. You know, any person that is touched by conscious, active, present love, even if at first it's imperceptible, begins to step into healing. And it's something that each and every one of us can do and facilitate for ourselves and others. So when I face and heal what's not love in me, then I'm healing the only thing that causes me to feel pain. And it will be my own projected pain and defects that I address and heal as I do that. So to realize that it's not another's deficiency that causes my hostility or desire to fight, their behavior, however degraded, doesn't require me to stoop to that level. And the only one who suffers from pain, seemingly over what appears to be another's offenses, is the person with the unresolved hostility, pain, and fight within themselves. When you recognize that if you're unable to hold to a state of love, that whatever energy you fall into, you get the original of it, and they just get the carbon copy. I'm reminded of Rumi, the 13th century Sufi poet. Powerful, powerful insight. He says, love is the cure. Your pain will give birth to more pain until your eyes exhale love as effortlessly as your body yields its scent. So the first century Aramaic forgiveness technology facilitates the healing of all dis-ease energy. It collapses false perception and gives access to unconscious dynamics, which psychologists tell us make up as much as maybe 98% of our thinking, so-called thinking. The instruction would be to forgive continuously, but never forgive yourself or anyone else for anything. Which when people hear me say it, they get confused because they think forgiveness means that I'm supposed to be letting you off the hook because you're the bad guy. You're the problem. No, forgive continuously means if there's anything restricting the flow of love in me, I need to be forgiving that energy in me. I need to be removing that energy in me. It's not about me letting you off the hook or letting myself, so-called forgiving myself, for what I've done. You know, if Yeshua, you know, were to hear the backward talk about forgiveness to this culture, he'd say, that's all Greek to me. And it's time for us to wake up to that and recognize that the tool of forgiveness is about how you become 1,000 times more powerful and influential by removing the interfering patterns of hostility or fear. Returning to the state of original creatorship. Sadly, you know, most of the world has been trained to give up that flow of love, literally life, for petty behaviors. And I'd offer it's because we and our generations did not have knowledge of what we're doing to ourselves. You know, if you watch the Oscars, it was interesting to watch this man laughing and seemingly having fun. All of a sudden, in an instant, another energy takes over. One that was his power person's dynamic. If you read from his biography, you hear him describing exactly what he did. In that moment was a replicate behavior of what his father did to his mother when he was 9 years of age. Now, in that moment, that would be the moment for forgiveness, as opposed to reinforcing the energy and doing it one more time. So aberrant behavior, the kind of behavior we saw the other night in the Oscars, is always a reflection of a pain, traumatized mind lying to itself that someone else is the cause of its pain. When I'm in blame, I'm in denial, and when I enter into denial, I dissociate from the cause of the pain that's inside of me, and I trick myself into believing the lie. I tell myself that this false perceptual construct that makes it look like the problem's out there is fake. My pain, my hidden pain, literally pain denied, is used to paint a fake picture of the person that I'm blaming. So now I use my pain to build my brain's image of them. My pain projected, I give up my power to them and believe that they're the cause of what's happening inside of me. And that, you know, I mean, and letting them off the hook because something's happening inside of me is just pure silliness. If I think that that's going to change what's happening inside of me. You know, when you hold the belief that somebody else is the problem, a good question to ask yourself is, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Why am I the one feeling it? Feeling it because it's inside of me. And if I've given it myself as the experience of love for that lie, the projection of my pain, then my thinking is in error. And I get to live in that hallucination that someone besides me is the problem. And, you know, it's not as if that's any solution because the pain still remains. It's only when you take responsibility, go of the need to lash out, as was probably modeled by your power person, and recognize that it's hurting people that hurt people. And each and every one who's lost their way in some sort of pain can be restored by the conscious, active presence of love. And so every tool that we've got is about how to do that, how to return to the truth of who we are, how to function once again as love.
And you have a hand up.
Well, then let's say hello.
I believe it's Miss Roma, 808. You are on the air.
Hello, everybody.
Aloha, young lady.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's a beautiful morning.
What's on your mind?
Well, the phrase, all death is suicide.
Yes.
When you said those words, it was just like they were, you know, blinking out on the page. Look at me, look at me, look at me.
Right?
Yeah. And then I was thinking about the illusion of age, you know, because we think that we die because we age.
Right.
And we acquiesce to the illusion of time when the reality is this conscious, active presence of love does not, it's eternal, right? I mean, just eternal.
I'm with you on that 100%.
Yeah. Do you have anything more to say about all death is suicide?
Well, you know, my take would be, you know, remember my background's in the world of physics. If I go back into the physics world, here's what they tell us. There's only one thing, and that one thing is energy. And energy is eternal. It can neither be created nor destroyed. Its form can be changed, but it can neither be created nor destroyed. I'd offer that if that's true, then we must be energy, and our form, what we call our physiology, is energy, and therefore it must be eternal, unless we put something unlike life into it, which causes it to fail and fall apart and what we call die. And so engaging, if we recognize the human being, you know, hold the newborn, we recognize the human being as love, then it's logical to me to make the leap to, then your device, a body-mind unit, must be a place for love to inhabit. And if love inhabits, if love is moving through the cells of this structure, then one has life. The minute one starts to tighten, lock down, shut their jaws down, stop breathing, and go into some form of rage or hatred or fear, they're engaging in a disintegrative energy and locking that energy into something that is not only designed to be eternal, but it is eternal. It's going to be eternal, whatever we do to it, but it's appearance and form is going to change because we put an energy in that is unlike the design of the form. And so when the physical device starts to fall apart, it does what we call decay, and it goes back to its original energetic forms. It goes on. But what if we stopped engaging in the energies of death and, you know, hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief? What if each time that comes up, we had a tool with which to actively remove that from the structure so that the only energies moving within us were those of life? Could we die? My thesis is we couldn't. It wouldn't be possible. And so the... you know, the result is, you know, the thesis this work is built on is, if it's unlike love, it doesn't belong in your form, forgive it. Forgive continuously, but don't play the Greek game of, I'm going to let you off the hook because I've engaged in this energy. Keep focusing on the place where the problem is and keep moving the energy and the structure out that doesn't belong. And ultimately, what we're going to face is 1,000 generations of assaults against love by ancestors, by the culture, because our culture's been so steeped in what never belonged. And so we stop committing. Each act where I choose, you know, if sadness comes up, if I choose to forgive sadness rather than engage sadness, doesn't mean hide from it. It means feel it. It means be with it fully. It means look at what's behind it. Oh, I have a goal, and my goal generates in my mind a perception that I've lost something, therefore when I lose things, I am sad. So what if I collapse that whole structure, which is different than love? If that structure is within me, am I removing one of the hammers of suicide from my physiology when I do that? By not pretending the sadness isn't there, not pushing it away, not pushing it down, not denying it, but being there full-blown with, wow, I really have sadness here. Now, let me see, what do I have to think in order to feel sadness? Oh, you know, my granddaughter isn't going to be with us tomorrow, and I want to play with her. I'm sad because of that. What if I recognize that it's the goal for me to have my granddaughter here tomorrow that causes my mind to actively bring sadness into awareness? Oh, so now I embrace that sadness and go, oh, I have a belief about loss. And that loss brings an energy that restricts the flow of love through my cells and therefore is a suicidal energy. What drives it in me? The goal for my granddaughter to be here. Okay, so what would forgiveness look like? It would look like me canceling that goal. Not because I don't want my granddaughter here, or not because there's something wrong with wanting my granddaughter here, but because if I load that goal in my mind and I recognize that it brings a death energy, an energy that's unlike love called sadness forward, then when I cancel that goal, my perceptual construct based in sadness collapses in on itself, and maybe I touch into the generational pattern of grief and loss and sadness over, you know, maybe a death that happened, you know, 10 generations ago in my bloodline. And as I open that and I start to process out literally that energy from my genes, from my physiology, I get to step another step into life and aliveness and vitality by removing the disintegrative energy that doesn't belong here. And that would be how forgiveness works, and why when I say forgive continuously but never forgive anyone or yourself, it's like every time there's an energy that's less than love that moves, recognize the goal that drives it. Forgiveness in Aramaic being the word shebag, to cancel that goal, collapse in and embrace the sadness, the grief, the rage, the hate, whatever it is. And when we do that in the presence of love, that is processed out of the system, begins to disappear. Aging, disease, suffering. So in a nutshell, that would be it. Does that fit for you? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. Another aspect of love is what I witness is that when I'm experiencing loving some object, whether it's my cat or my neighbor or loved one, there is activity of delight moving through my organism. So the object of love could be self or others. And to me, that's it shows up differently. Usually my love for myself is quite serene. I mean, it's not particularly active. It just is like water that has got no waves in it. Whereas, you know, sometimes the ocean has quite a surf, you know, and that would be, that's how it feels when I'm experiencing love for an object, is that this surf ocean arises and starts moving. But normally it's just serenity of being with myself. I don't know. Can you say anything about that?
Well, my offering would be that, am I, you know, when I use the word loving someone, it indicates that I'm doing something to them. And my offering would be, is it the act of doing something to them, which is what the culture teaches, or is it me experiencing my created essence as love, that state that you talk about being serene, and that when I try to shift it into, so it's a noun, it's a state of being that I'm experiencing, when I try to shift it into a verb, I'm going to do it to somebody, is that where disturbance comes? Because, in fact, my offering would be, we can't love anyone. We can be in that serene presence of love that we are with someone, or if there's something of turmoil in us that someone resonates, then they've given us an opportunity to forgive that which is of turmoil and restore ourselves to that serene place of being, that serene place of love. How does that feel for you?
Well, you know, I understand.
Say it again.
I understand. Just the,
oh, cool.
The being, the essence of love. Be love as love.
And so here we are with the opportunity to be that space for each other and support that aliveness that is really our identity, being there running our physiology continuously.
I don't know. It just, when there's an object, it seems like there's an activity more than just a present. When the love is expressing toward it, it just automatically streams forth. You know, I don't
yes.
do anything.
Extension.
It just comes out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like an activity.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd classify that. I'd categorize that as the extension of that state of being. And that's what we're capable of. And people call
yeah.
that loving another, as opposed to standing in the state of being that we are and extending that to another.
Yeah. I suppose many people don't experience the love in just pure being because it's so obscured by their grief and their fear and all of these things that our worksheets involve.
All those things that need to be forgiven.
Yeah, they can disappear, thank God. And thank you, Michael. Thank you. I don't know how you happen to create this whole process, but I surely am grateful.
Well, I'm grateful to be able to share it with you. And, you know, our granddaughter being with us the last 3.5 years, she's been a wonderful teacher at teaching us to be the presence of love, to hold to that space. And what I find personally is that I'm more able to extend that state of being, that space to others as she has taught me more and more about how to do it. And it's a different verbal state than anything I've ever experienced.
It's a different verbal state?
Yes. Well, the experience of her and functioning as love with her, recognizing her as love and myself as love, and recognizing that, you know, it's like in that recognition, in that process, I've learned how to verbalize it differently than I'm loving her, but literally recognizing that I'm being the space recognizes who she is, and it's not something I'm doing to her. It's something that I'm standing in, encouraging her to stand in, and when we do that together, it's absolute bliss. And I find that, you know, more and more, we were out for dinner last night. Her other grandmother had a birthday yesterday, and we were sitting having dinner with them. You know, the whole family was there, the kids and Aria and Jeannie and I and the other grandmother and grandfather. And, you know, it was just a very sweet space of just being with this other person as love and recognizing them as who they are. So, and it's still something that I'm learning to speak about. To move out of the cultures, oh, I'm loving them, I'm in love with them, to into more of, I guess, refining my language to understand that I'm not loving them. I'm experiencing that serenity because I'm functioning out of who I am with them. And when I give that gift to Aria Rain, and I don't have expectations of her, I don't have goals for her, other than to hold to that space and support her experiencing herself as that. And then watching all the awesome things she does out of that when she realizes who she is.
Like, what kind of shift do you see when she has that realization?
I guess the word that I would put to it would be sweetness. You know, it's just, you know, it's like, how does it get better than this?
Oh, gosh.
You know, I repeatedly go back to what Jeannie shared with me the other day when she had been playing with her younger cousin who's just 3 months, and how she just, you know, quote, just is enamored with babies. And, you know, they were waiting for me to come out of the building, and Aria says to Jeannie, you know, I just love Papa so much, and if he were only small, I would love him more. And it's like, when I contemplate that, I mean, how does it get better than that? For me, it's like the state that supports in me is beyond comprehension. Just thinking about this little creature saying that, you know, how does it get better than that? It doesn't. And what if, you know, we all were able to experience ourselves continuously as that, then all this garbage that's going on in the world.
Well, we're here. It's very real. You're here.
It's very real.
It's very real. So
yeah,
my logical
sure
mind tells me you do make a difference just by being here, being love, that it does make a difference.
It's contagious.
Yeah.
You know, that line in the worksheet that says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. When I bring that presence forward, it makes it easier for everyone to shift into choosing that in themselves rather than choosing all the insane dynamics of the culture that have been brainwashed into us for centuries and generations, you know, things like
and
what's going
really
on in Ukraine.
Thing. It's been going on for such a long time. That,
yeah.
And it's like you were saying, I forget how you said it, but it's a process of learning contrary to what the culture dumped on us as newborns, as far as what reality is, reality being love.
Right. And you watch the pained energetic patterns that people carry from generation to generation to generation. You know, I just really was appreciative of the person who brought forward, it was actually a post on Facebook that brought forward this paragraph from the memoir of Will Smith, and how he talked about, I mean, he literally categorized this one event in his life that happened when he was 9 years of age as the thing that shaped his whole life. And it was his father violently hitting his mother. And under stress, without the tool of forgiveness, what does he do? He gets up and hits somebody right in the face. I mean, on national television in front of the whole Hollywood elite. And vilely curses him out. You know, it's like, and, you know, I don't get that that's what Will Smith is about, but I get that's what his pain's about. I get that's what his power person dynamic is. You know, this, you've heard me say it over and over, the power person dynamic is running the world. And this 9-year-old boy's perceptual construct, the way in that circumstance that his field opened and he took in all of that violence, here he is 50 years later. The stimulus is there, and his mind just kicks right back into exactly what his power person did to him. And our work, I would offer, is to recognize those dynamics in ourselves, and when they come up, be forgiving continuously. Not Will Smith forgiving his father, not Will Smith forgiving himself, but Will Smith forgiving as to the violence that he carries from that generational pattern. You know, when did his father watch somebody striking someone? Probably watched his father who watched his father who watched his father. So instead of following those inclinations, can I stand as the presence of who I am and recognize, wow, there's this horrendous tidal wave of rage and pain in me that I can choose to dissolve now and forgive rather than fall prey to it and pass on the generational patterns or model it for the whole world. You know, here he is. He took, I bet if we could sit down and have a conversation with Will Smith, he would say, oh, the most aberrant thing I would ever want to have anyone have is watching someone strike another. The thing that he said marked his life more than anything else. He said that in his memoir. More than anything else, that event shaped him. And what did he model for the whole world? Exactly what he hated most that his power person did.
I mean, he must be mortified, actually.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, I my offering would be he was walking up to that stage to Chris Rock doing exactly what he wished he'd done to his father. Returned what his father did that he just abhorred watching happen. And, you know, again, that power person dynamic, my offering is what runs the world, and it's when we stop and take a breath and breathe and recognize, wait a minute, this isn't my true nature, but it's driving me. This has been aroused in me, so it wants to drive my voice. What wants to happen? My power person's voice, my power person's behavior wants to come out and reflect as me.
I don't want
what
to hear you say
that,
that person
I can
runs the
that.
World. In, let's say,
say
it has run the world.
Well,
don't
unfortunately,
put it in
the truth is right now. And the truth is, and until we tell the truth, it's not going
it,
to be
yes.
the presence of love.
But we
that's
have
what's
that
running the game.
Creative. Yeah.
And it's part of the healing process to be able to acknowledge and recognize the truth.
Yeah, right. We can't ignore it. It has to. But I think in present tense, that's where we create. That's where we are the creators, the co-creators with God. Present tense, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well,
and
I won't take any more.
We have to tell
I'm sure someone else wants to get on the call. So thank you very much, and love to
great
everyone.
Great points. Yeah, nice conversation. Thank you. Great points, Roma. Appreciate you. Aloha.
Okay.
Awesome. And Susan is now with us, so I'm going to turn on her microphone.
Hi there, young lady.
Hey, hi, guys. Sorry about that.
Welcome. We're cool.
Thanks.
What's happening in your mind, in your world today?
Oh, a lot of stuff. I had a question from yesterday, and that is, when I was very young and throughout my, let's say, well into my childbearing years, I felt fearless, and I did a lot of stuff in my life and went places. And now as an older person, I'm feeling more fear about stuff like that. It isn't really fear, but I was wanted to ask you about just being older. I remember a woman at college where I was who was an administrator, and I always was critical of her in my mind because she seemed so anxious about certain things, just little things like not getting to dinner on time and little things like that. And now I think of her and I think, I wonder if she was just feeling her age in a certain way. I don't even know how to ask this. But I'm not as much of a daredevil as I was, and I don't ride my bike anymore, for instance, because it's not a bike-friendly area that I live, and I've taken a couple of spills, and although I'm intact, I realize maybe it's time not to ride the bike, and somebody else needed the bike.
Sounds like wisdom.
Oh, good. Okay. Just, for instance, another one is I'm more of an introvert. I just don't like being out and going to parties or dinner parties or anything like that. I want to be quiet. But I'm wondering, am I...
You're enjoying your own company.
I do, actually. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds like you're enjoying your own company. And you know, you're more and more living in the truth of who you are. And you know, a lot of people, my observation over the years has been a lot of people want to be out there, somebody else, something's going on, just because there's something inside of them chasing them that they don't want to face and deal with and feel. So if they keep their attention out there and focused, then they don't have to deal with what's chasing them from the inside. Once you slow down and start facing that, it becomes much more enjoyable to just hang out with yourself. It's like...
Well, We actually
made that statement last night when we got
Exactly. We were talking about, we went to dinner and it was nice. And it was like, you know, and we're both just as happy to just be together and here and in a quiet space, just being with ourselves and being with our own process and being with our study and with the work that we're doing with ourselves and each other. That it's like... And I acknowledge, you know, I mean, I did a lot of years of traveling. We literally got to do the globe. We, you know, did cruises, and, you know, one year we did 6 different countries, and, you know, and that was great.
Wow.
It's like, I have no desire for that whatsoever. I'd rather come home, hang out with Jeannie, breathe, and just be. It's like...
That's good to hear. That is really good and assuring to hear. Well,
I like being with my wife. I like being with myself.
Mm-hmm.
Why
yeah,
would I want to go somewhere else?
I know. Well, I was just wondering if I'm losing some kind of an important edge or something, but I guess not. It's a matter of how you think about it, I guess. So... Anyway, I have...
Mind energy becomes flesh.
Well, you know, and the work I was thinking, you know, I started working with you guys on the show before COVID hit. But when COVID hit, it was like a grounding to have this middle of the day break from whatever I was doing and be doing the work and listening to people who are now a community of people. It's just been a huge gift to have this resource, like instant company, and it's constructive. It's talking about all the stuff I'm interested in, and obviously you are too, but I did think about you and wondered how you'd feel if all the shutdowns stopped. Would you get back on the road?
No.
Yeah.
Nope. No interest.
How? Okay.
But I do have a mind shifter for you.
Okay.
If you'd like a mind shifter.
Sure.
Whatever I do, I know that the truth is my behavior is on track.
All right.
And I'm doing the right thing.
Okay.
And I offer that mind shifter because a pattern that I've heard in your speaking is pretty much the opposite. No matter what happens, no matter what I do, and this would probably be a power person message, and I offer that mind shifter as a way to counteract that power person message, because your summation of yourself is always, well, I'm probably doing something wrong here.
Oh, you know, Michael, this segues right into a weird experience I had this morning. I woke up.
How so?
And I realized, well, I have a story. You know how people all have stories. I have a little tiny autobiography that goes something like this. I was a lively kid in the womb. They thought I was a boy. I was born a girl. I was not named for a week because they were really expecting a boy. I was put to the breast and bit my mother, and she put me on a bottle. And the message was, she said about my being in the womb, I thought you were a boy because you were so lively. You moved around, you kicked, it's like you were dancing in there. And she said, and I love your feistiness. And she always said that. But I bit her out of my feistiness, and I earned a kind of rejection. And my mother wasn't a touchy kind of person, so that contact was taken away. And then there were the whippings, and I lost trust in my mother forever. Even though we had a good relationship at the end of her life, and we took care of her for 2 years, emotionally I never shared with her. I realized that just recently, that I never opened up to her, never talked to her about what was going on. So I think my feistiness as a story was necessary and good, but it was also a nuisance, and it was punishable. And I chose friends who'd punish me. If I pick a mother type of person, and I would want her to like me, but it was exactly like my mother. I'd pick a power person, a very appealing woman, teacher or something, who would punish me or reject me or not like me. So even on the radio show, am I talking too much? I'm not asking you to say anything about that. I'm noticing the pattern, that's all. And I'm sure thus and so person doesn't like me. I've often thought that Dr. Tim didn't like me. It's because he's reserved and he's professional, and I think, well, maybe he doesn't like me, you know. And so I end up alone emotionally, and my feistiness sort of saves me, but it saves me into being okay in spite of things, but being alone.
Distracts you.
That's the sort of story I've been telling.
Yeah, it's more distracting yourself rather than acknowledging, admiring, and being with yourself. And that's where I think that mind shifter will help you to uproot some of that and eradicate this power person message that no matter what you do, you're doing it wrong. I mean, I've heard you deliver that message about yourself so many times.
God.
And I'm here to support you interpreting everything that you do through love powerfully, beautifully, sweetly, and wonderfully in tune with the truth about yourself as love.
Well, I think that's true, but I don't believe it.
That's what the mind shifter will help you to open up. Crack that belief, that nut, and let it go.
Okay.
Like, be finished with that power person message. Like, you've heard that one long enough, often enough. And know that, you know, I've said before, when we're under stress, the power person's voice comes through us as our voice. And we think it's us telling ourselves the truth, when all it's doing is that voice of the power person's coming through, reinforcing their beliefs, their modeling, their messages. It's time to replace that message with one of self-caring and self-approval.
And it's also tragic because my mother would have loved my friendship and confidence. I know this. I only know it recently. But I remember now times when she would knock on my bedroom door because she heard me crying or something, and she'd say, "Are you okay?" And I'd toughen up, and I'd say, "Oh, I'm fine. I was just coughing or whatever." I shut her out, and she was lonely for contact, I'm sure. And I hope the universe will correct that somehow.
That was her power person dynamic playing out, reflected, and it just goes on from generation to generation to generation. And this work is about breaking those generational chains, coming out of the desert, coming out of the unconscious, of just replicating that good old family feeling and moving into the promised land of conscious co-creation. Oh, here I am, a creator, a being called love, and that's who I am. And so here I am enjoying my own company right at home because that's what I enjoy. Not, I need to question myself. Is there something wrong with me because?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. It's both, actually. Yeah, I can feel that. Anyway, thanks, Michael.
So I support you coming into deeper relationship with the truth and the integrity of who you are and the gifts you bring to the world. And I really admire how, you know, I've listened to you over the last several years and the conversations you've had that are deeply, deeply caring conversations about the people in your life, especially about the young men in your life, your son, your grandson. I think the amount of time and energy and intelligence and willingness and work you've put into creating a space of support for them is just, like, beyond admirable. I think it's awesome.
I hope it helps. I got into trouble with my daughter this morning because I told her I'd sent a TED Talk to two of her boys about sugar being a drug and toxic to the system and it really impacts your mental health. And she said, "Mom, I'm trying to get them off pot and alcohol and you're adding this to the mix. Would you please," you know, and she just was so upset. So I apologize, and that's where it sits, but I got to watch it. But I do think that's another conversation. Yeah.
So notice that your daughter is feeding back your power person conversation to you. Oh, your wisdom isn't good enough. You did something wrong. It's the same conversation. So you probably modeled it well for her, and so here she is playing it out and feeding back, and it probably becomes a block to your intimacy with her. And so as you resolve those issues that you saw reflecting with your mother, those issues will tend to dissolve in relationship with your daughter.
That's good. It already
that
is
mind
in
shifter.
Many ways, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, it's telling me we're down for the last 10 seconds, so the show's going to cut us off.
Right.
But just know that we're holding the space for that. We appreciate you and cherish you deeply. All right,
dear. Thank you very much, Michael and Jeannie. Okay, bye.
Okay.